presence. Well, it is the month of July, and we are going to hear a story today. I love stories. But in this month of July, I am facing another birthday. At the end of the month, I'm going to turn 53. So I was thinking about this a lot. I think about it whenever my birthday comes up. Excuse me just a minute. I've got like my, I'm discombobulated today. But whenever I get to this point, I kind of think about like I'm, once I was 50 and kind of getting past 50, I begin to think that like I'm at the halfway point of my life. Well, really, the Bible promises at least 120, but I'm not doing the 120. I'm just not. I'd have way too many wrinkles by then. So I'm like, I'm not opting for the 120. But so I'm maybe the 100. But anyway, at this point in my life, I come face to face with a lot of questions that I start asking myself because I'm a thinker and I'm kind of in my head a lot. And so I ask myself questions like, am I making an impact? At my birthday, I kind of start recounting things like, am I making an impact? You know, am I gonna leave a mark? Is my life gonna fulfill a purpose? Am I in the midst of God's will? And I start contemplating all these things. I don't know. Do you ever do that? Do you ever find yourself where you're just kind of thinking, what am I doing? Am I doing what I'm supposed to be doing? Am I on track with God? Am I in the middle of his will? You know, you kind of have these wonder if situations in your life. So, the good news is that that God always gives us demonstrations to answer those questions for us, and he helps us out. So today we're going to look at a story, and I want to include you. I want to pull you into a story. My mom was an excellent storyteller when I was a little kid, and, you know, I was saying last night, my mom's 76, and she's working in the nursery last night, and she's in there on the floor telling those kids stories. My mom always made stories exciting for me. She always drew me into the story. She always made the story real for me. And, you know, when you look at the Bible, you see that there are a lot of stories in the Bible. And I think that's because they're relatable to us. Well, I want to talk to you today about this, about the power of one. The power of one. One individual, one person making a difference. And that's what I think of when I look at myself, when I am asking myself all those questions and pondering those things, and one person, am I going to make a difference? Am I going to make an impact? What's going to happen? So the Bible, when you start really kind of examining the stories in the Bible, you notice that a lot of these stories are about one person. Okay, so name some of those. Last week in 252, we talked about King David. We talked about David as a small boy with Goliath. Then there's Noah, then there's Moses, and then there's Mary, and then there's Jacob, and then there's Gideon. You don't see a lot of, like, teams of people. Of course, they involve teams of people, but in the Bible, you see the power of one. And I think that is interesting, and a totally aside, kind of a sidetrack before we get into the story. But isn't it amazing that God shows us from the very onset the power of one? The impact of one. So today, I'm going to challenge you. First of all, I'm going to challenge you to read a book in the Old Testament this week called Esther. I want you to read it from beginning to end, and it's not very big. And then I want to challenge you to realize the impact that you can make as one person and why the enemy works so hard to destroy your one power that you have. So diving into this today, I need to set up the background of a story. How many of you know, sometimes when you go into a movie, you ever been in a sequel, you know, and somebody goes, hey, you want to go see a movie with me? And maybe it's like the second or third sequel, and you get in there, and you're like, I am totally lost. I don't know who this character is. I don't know why they're married to this person. I don't know why they're mad at this person. You're totally lost. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background of the story that we're going to dive into today, and this is the story of Esther. So our Bible that we have on our laps, that we have on our phones, is always demonstrating us the fact that regardless of one person's race or gender or age or ethnicity or social standing, that one person can make a difference. So we're going to journey into this story, and we're going to look at the background of the setup of this story. So this story begins with a king. And this king's name is King Xerxes. And if you look in history, you can see that he was a king and he reigned over all of Persia. In fact, he had captured, subdued the whole entire known world at that time, except for one country, and that was the country of Greece, which we'll talk about in a little bit. King Xerxes was really proud of all of his accomplishments. So he decided that he was going to throw a party. Now, I know that we just had a wedding here on Friday night. Ann and Pat got married. Yay, finally, yay. We're all excited. They got married. It was a party. About 10 o'clock, you know, I'm like, okay, I'm partied out. I'm 53. I'm partied out. It's 10 o'clock. I want my bed. But, you know, in a party, there's a lot of elaborate things, and a party can last a day, a weekend, your birthday weekend, whatever you're going to do, a party. But King Xerxes, he decides that he's going to throw a bash. So he calls everybody in, his political advisors, his leaders, his officials, all the bigwigs, and he calls them in. And they have a six-month-long party. Now, that's a party. 6 months of partying. So they're coming to the end of the 6 months of partying. And you know, King Xerxes, why he had this party, he had it for a number of reasons. The purpose of the party was for strategic meetings. Right. But really, it was for this reason. King Xerxes wanted to display his great wealth. He wanted to puff himself up. He wanted to impress all of the leaders that he had before him. Why he wanted to do that was he wanted to overtake the country of Greece. And so to do that, he wanted to show how much wealth. He wanted to impress the people. He wanted to gather their support. So he is wining and dining them for 6 months. Whew, it's a party. Now, following the six-month bash, he decides to finish it up, not with a one-day bash, but with a seven-day bash. So he's just like a party animal, this King Xerxes. So he, for the last 7 days, he invites the least to the greatest people. These people are inflamed with wine. They're drunken out of their minds. He's displaying his power, his magnificent wealth, and the people are just giving him all kinds of compliments. They are brown-nosing. They are flattering him. They are telling him, you're the greatest. You're awesome. Why? Because he's having a party, and they want to be at the party. Now, for the climax of this scene, which is happening in chapter 1 of Esther, which you can read about, here we have these half-drunken, out-of-their-mind guests, which are men. They're crazy. They're nuts. They've been partying for 6 months and now 7 days. So King Xerxes, he is out of his mind and he's thinking, what else can I do to display my wealth, my power? And he goes, aha, I've got it. He gathers some of his little minions and he says, hey guys, you half-drunken idiots, I want you to go down and I want you to see the queen. Go tell Queen Vashti that I want her to come up here. Now, some parts of the Bible say one thing, some parts of the Bible say another thing. It depends on the history that you look at. Some people say that she dressed up, they wanted her dress up in her regal robes. Now, she was a knockout. She was beautiful. She was sexy. And nobody could look upon her except the king. So he's going to bring her out, and he wants to parade her in front of these half-drunken idiots, including himself. Show off his possession. Remember when we talked about this earlier this year? We talked about how at some point women were possessions back then in the Bible. He wants to show off his greatest possession, which is Queen Vashti. Some people say she had robes on. Some people say she had her birthday suit on. So anyway, the half-drunken idiots show up at her door. Ding, 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 ding. Hey, queen, why don't you come on out and parade around and show us your beauty? You know, that's what king wants. Queen Vashti exerts her power of oneness at this point. Those little words, the two letters that are very well known by two-year-olds. And that word is N-O-No. I am not going to parade my wares in front of a bunch of half-drunken idiots. No. I'm for modesty. I'm gorgeous and I know it, but I am not going to parade my body in front of a bunch of people and let them ogle me. No, N-O, no. Well, that doesn't set well first with the advisors that come, the minions, and it doesn't sit well with the king. They go to the king and they make this report and they say, hey, your woman? She says, no. And we don't think this is a good idea because it's going to spread among the wives. They're going to think that they have power to say no to us. They're going to think that they can have some authority to do what they want. We got to squash this. The king, because they're all half drunk. Let me just tell you this. I am not for drunkenness. But let me tell you, if you ever find yourself in the middle of drunkenness, don't make rash decisions. It's not a good idea. So the king, because they're all half drunk, half in the bag, he makes a decision and he thinks it's a great idea. Yeah, we got to show her who's boss. I'm the king. We can't have this insolence, this rebellion among the women. So he says, hey, I'm done with her. She's out. We're going to kick her to the curb. We're going to divorce her. We're throwing her out. She can no longer be in my presence. She is done, finished, over, out. She's gone. So he makes that decree, makes that statement, he makes that judgment, and they kick her out. Woo! Awesome! The story just gets better and better and better. Her disobedience had excited the king to madness. And all this is happening in chapter 1. Now, between chapter 1 and chapter 2, there's about 4 years that take place. In those 4 years, the king goes out, and he tries to conquer Greece. He does for one effect, but in the end, it ends up disastrous, and he does not conquer Greece. All right, when a king has not conquered or done what he wanted to do, and he just had this six-month-long bash and a week of parties to, you know, impress everybody, he's not feeling too good when he comes back home. And when he comes back home, and he wants a little lovin'. He wants a little, oh, honey, it's okay. But there's no queen there. Why? Because he kicked her to the curb. So he has nobody to love him, or it's going to be okay, honey. He gets depressed. Men, you need your wives. We're your biggest supporters. We're the ones that are saying, hey, you can do it, honey, you know. So he gets depressed. He doesn't have anybody to encourage him. His advisors, the king's depressed. What are we going to do? I know. Let's have a beauty pageant. Let's have a Miss Universe contest. And we're going to find him a wife. So we find this in chapter 2 of verse 2. They actually say this. This is their criteria for the queen. Let a search be made for beautiful young virgins for the king. There's their criteria. Beautiful young virgins for the king. All right. So the girls are picked from 127 provinces, and they're going to be paraded in front of the king so he can make his selection of a new queen. Well, the king said, hey, this is a brilliant idea. I love the Miss Universe pageant. Let's have it. So they draft all the girls. The beauty contest was for all these young women. In the midst of these women that come in is one girl. And her name is Esther. She's a Jewish girl. When she's picked, her cousin, Uncle Mordecai, he tells her, hey, when you're going to the king's palace, just make sure one thing. Do not tell them that you're a Jew. She's like, okay, I won't. So I'm going to take a quick survey. Ladies, how long does it take you to get ready to go out, like, dressed to the nines? All right, how many of you women can do that in 15 minutes? All right, you get blue ribbons. How many of you can do that in 30 minutes? Awesome. How about 45 minutes? How about an hour? How, 2 hours? No takers? Okay, an hour. Okay, so we got all these guys. Okay, the reason I ask this is because these ladies come in. And how many of you know if you're going to the Miss Universe pageant, you're going to have to get dressed up. You got to get pampered and primped up, and you got to look good. These women were primped and pampered and taught and instructed. You know, you got to get the Miss America walk, the Miss America wave. I don't have that, so I'm not going to demonstrate that. These women were gathered together, and they were saturated in oil of myrrh and cosmetics and perfumes for 12 months. Okay, now I think it's just kind of funny, but I know they had different things, but if you're a guy, you're depressed, and you're waiting for your virgins, don't you think, like, to wait another year is a really long time? I do. So after the prep time, each girl went before the king, and they were paraded in front of him, but one girl stood out among all of them. She was a ravishing beauty. She was absolutely gorgeous, and his heart was drawn to her, and her name was Esther. Chapter 2 and verse 17, it says this: the king, he loved Esther more than the other women. And because of that fact, she becomes the queen. Holy cow. Jackpot! She becomes the queen. Now, a little bit of background about somebody else in this story that's going to enter the scene, and this is Mordecai. Mordecai is known as the Jew. Mordecai is solid, he's faithful, he's sane, and he's godly. We're talking today about what? The power of what? One. All right, Queen Vashti. Her power of her no reverberated for a long, long period of time throughout the kingdom. Her power of no actually opened up the opportunity for Esther to be in the place that she was at. Her power of one paved the way for a whole nation of people to be saved, Queen Vashti's. So now we have the power of one, Mordecai, cousin Mordecai. Here is a guy, and he's presented with a girl, his cousin, Esther. She's an orphan. So you know what he does? He adopts her. He becomes a single father and takes on this child by himself. So as the story goes on and you see what kind of person Esther is, I want you to realize the power of one, this one person, and how instrumental this one person was in another person's life, Mordecai. So her cousin Mordecai, you know, when you become the queen, you get to bring your entourage with you. So she packs up her cousin Mordecai and says, Mordecai, jackpot, you get a job. He gets a job. He gets to be in the palace. He gets to be a guarded gate. And he loves it. He's respected and well known. But how many of you know when you're a guard at the gate, you hear things and you see things? So one day, Mordecai's at the gate with his ear out and he hears two people chatting. We're going to kill the king. It's an assassination plot. I told you this story has a lot of intrigue. It's an assassination plot. They're going to kill the king. So what does Mordecai do? He goes to the queen. He goes, Esther, like seriously, you got to go to the king and tell him there's these two guys and they're going to kill him. She goes, okay. So she asks for an audience with the king. She gets an audience with the king. She lets the king know, hey, there's these two guys, they're going to assassinate you. He then delves into the whole situation, finds out it's true, and he hangs them. All right, problem solved. Now, Queen Esther, she's such a sweet girl. She tells the king, you know, king, it wasn't me. You know, I wasn't the one. I didn't find out the plot. It was my cousin Mordecai. He's the one that did it. King says, okay, noted. Well, this little thing, and I want you to note it, this is a very, very important thing that just happened right here in this story. So remember, Mordecai was the one that found out the assassination plot. Okay, let's keep delving into Esther. Meanwhile, now we're in chapter 3. It's so exciting, isn't it? Chapter 3 is when we get to meet somebody else in the story. And this somebody else is, what does every story have to have? A what? A villain, that's right. We have our villain. And his name is Haman. And he is vile. He's a villain. He's a masterpiece of evilness. And the king has exalted him to a very high position in his whole kingdom. He's actually the number two man. So here we have Haman in chapter 3. We learn of him that he's evil. He's been given a higher seat than anybody else. In chapter 3 at verse 2, it says that all officials at the king's gate knelt down and paid honor to Haman, for the king commanded this. So this guy has such a great position in the kingdom, and the king has commanded that anytime he's out and about, the people kneel, they bow down, they give this guy honor. Well, we have one little problem here, and that's also in this verse. So let's keep reading in the verse, chapter 3, verse 2. So all the officials at the king's gate, they knelt down and they would pay honor to Haman, for the king had commanded it concerning him, but Mordecai would not kneel down. He was a Jew, and to bow down to anyone or anything besides his God, it was against God's law. All right, imagine, let's see, I'm going to pick somebody. Shelly Parody. Shelly, will you stand up? Thanks. All right, so everybody else is sitting down and honoring me. Who stands out? Oh, look, there's Shelly. She's standing up. Why is Shelly standing up? Everybody else is sitting down. I want Shelly to demonstrate the power of one, Mordecai, not bowing down, but standing up. If you scan the crowd, you're looking. Why is Shelly standing up in the middle of Sister Terry's sermon? Because she asked her to. Okay, you can sit down. The power of one. So Haman doesn't just see all these people like honoring him and everything. What infuriates him? What gets his goat? What causes rage to just come out his fingertips? Mordecai, not bowing down, not doing what he was supposed to do. The power of one person standing up against evil. Look it, there's evil all around, but one person is standing up. The power of one doing what God called that one person to do, and that one person standing up and refusing to bow is going to cause an insurrection. Mordecai is inflamed. He's crazy mad, and he goes to the king to tell him about it. And in his heart of hearts, he says this to himself: I'm not just going to stop with Mordecai, the Jew. I'm sick of these Jewish people. It's the whole Jewish race that's causing us problems. Those Jews are nothing but trouble. So we're not just going to wipe Mordecai off the face of the earth. We're going to annihilate the entire Jewish population. All right, who would that include? Queen Esther, because she's a Jew, right? But nobody knows it. So he goes and he has an audience with the king, and he incites the king to anger and tells him about this Mordecai guy. And the king is swayed by Haman. Haman sways and turns his heart, and he makes a decree. Haman writes it up. Haman comes up to it. Haman actually, if you look in the Bible, he raises the money himself to put out this marketing campaign against the Jews. He takes his own money, tells the king, don't worry about it. I'm going to fund this thing myself. He puts his own money out there to make this marketing campaign. What did they have to do? They had to go and make this decree. So the king stamps the decree and says that the Jews are going to be, when Jews are found out, they're going to be killed. So they have to go out and spread this news all over the place. They put it up. They, you know, email, text, Facebook, you know, it's out there. You know, people are seeing this. But Esther, she has no idea what's happening at this point in time because she's kind of insulated within the walls of the kingdom. We're going to start in chapter 4, and we're going to read verses 11 through 16. So we're in chapter 4 of Esther, verses 11 through 16. All the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces known that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned by the king has but one law, they will be put to death. Okay, let's just stop right there. This is Queen Esther speaking to Mordecai, because Mordecai hears about the plot. And he is going to go to Esther, and he's going to ask her to do something. He's going to ask her to pull out her card of one. I think she's down here. He's going to ask her to pull out her card of one, and he wants her to throw down her card and use it, her power of one. So before she starts speaking this scripture, she's speaking in this scripture to Mordecai, because Mordecai has said, Queen Esther, I need you to do something. Here's what's happening in the kingdom. I need you to go, and I need you to talk to the king. So she is replying to him, telling him, Mordecai, I can't go to the king unless I'm summoned. unless he asks me to come there, because otherwise I'm going to be put to death. Unless he extends this gold scepter to me and says it's okay. Let's keep reading there. Unless the king extends the gold scepter to them and spares their lives. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go to the king. So the last time I saw the king was 30 days ago. It's been a long time, and he hasn't summoned me. Esther's words in verse 12 are reported back to Mordecai, and he sent back this answer. And this is a famous passage of scripture at the end, you'll see. It says, "Do not think, Esther, that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all Jews will escape. For if you remain silent, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to your royal position for such a time as this." So he's telling her, Esther, you know what? If you abdicate and you say, "I'm not going to do it," God's going to raise up somebody else to save his people. But I'm telling you, if you say no and you don't do and use your power of one, your family and you are going to be killed, murdered, slaughtered. He said, "Esther, I'm begging you, don't you realize that your power of one, that this is the moment, this is the time, you have been called to the kingdom for such a time as this. Use your power of one. God is inside of you. God is with you. I, Mordecai, have prepared you for such a time as this. Use your power of one." Esther replies back to him in verse 16, "Go gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days or night, and I will send my attendants, and we will fast also. And when this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law, and if I perish, if I die, if he slaughters me, I die." What a huge commitment. Esther is using her power of one. She is risking it all. She's throwing down the dice. She's going to go in. But what does she ask for first? "I need your covering. I need your prayer. I need us to fast and seek God, because you know what? I need God's wisdom to say and do exactly what I need to do, because otherwise I'm not going to have this opportunity again." So she prepares herself spiritually for this task. And this is opportunity, and this is the moment. And that's why it is so important for us to be prepared spiritually at all times for a moment when God asks us to do something. So let's bring this all together and wrap it all up today. Armed with God's courage, she put on her royal robes. She went into the inner court and waited for the king to see her. So she's kind of like, she's out in the lobby. The king's here, and she's in the lobby, and she's just waiting around for the king to see her. Now, he might see her and not acknowledge her or summon her, but he might offer the scepter to her. What does the Bible say? The Bible says this: the king saw her, and he reached out his scepter. Why? Because he loved her. Why? Because they'd fasted and prayed. Why? Because she was spiritually prepared. Why? Because she was going to use her power of one to save an entire nation of people. She would live, at least for this moment. He asked her, "Esther, what do you want?" Well, she couldn't just say, "Hey, I want to revoke the law." That's not going to work. Remember, she's prayed and she sought God, and God has put into her heart his wisdom. His steps. The Bible says that the steps of the righteous are ordered by God. God always leads you in steps. Sometimes you'll get overwhelmed if you see the whole plan, but she realizes the power of a step. And so she asked for the first step. "I want to have a party. I want to host a banquet. And I want it to be you and me and Haman, the evil, wicked guy." So King Xerxes, he's a party animal. He says, "Hey, let's have a party." So they have a party. And Haman attends. And the banquet's a success. He has such a great time at the banquet, he brings the queen in. He says, "Esther, like seriously, what do you want? It's not just a party. I'll give you half of my kingdom if you ask for it." She says, "You know what? I'd just like to have another party." "What? Back-to-back parties?" Well, like, hello, you just had a 6 month and a 7 day. Like, let's have a back-to-back party. So this is okay. It's going to be Queen Esther, the king, and the evil guy Haman. So they're having another party. why this is important is, let me tell you, because God always directs steps. And if she hadn't had a second party between the first and second, let me tell you what happened. Let's look at the scripture. So, the first party's happened. We're waiting for the second party to happen. Esther 5. Esther replied, "My petition and request is this, for the king regards me with favor. If it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, let the king in heaven come tomorrow to the banquet I prepare, and then I'll answer the king's question." Woo-hoo. Meanwhile, Haman, who enjoyed the first banquet, he's kind of like on a high because he's with the king, the queen, and himself. Little private party here. But you know what is eating at him still? Shelley Parody. It's driving Mordecai crazy. No, it's driving Haman crazy. It's not Shelley, it's Mordecai. He can't get that out of his gut. That man had the audacity to stand up and not bow down to him. So he goes home and he starts complaining to his wife. Wives, women, I told you, Queen Vashti, the power of the no. Women, you have to be careful and wise with your words when you speak things to your husbands, because they will take you at your word. He comes home and he's complaining to his wife about Mordecai refusing to bow. So his wife says, "Fine, stop your complaining. Build a gallows and let's hang him." "Oh, thank you, wife." So he builds a gallows. He builds the gallows right next to his house. Why? Because you can look out the window and watch the guy get hanged. Why wouldn't you? It's 75 feet high. Do you know how high that is? 7 stories. I mean, this is a large gallows to hang a guy. It's huge. Meanwhile, while they're constructing the gallows in between the first and second party, the king is restless and can't sleep. He's up. He's gone to the bathroom. He's wandering around. He doesn't know what to do. He's up. "Did I have too much coffee?" I mean, he's restless. He doesn't know. What do you do when you can't sleep? You count sheep. You read a book. So he picks up a boring history book. In the kingdom, remember, we got to go back to, remember the incident with the assassination? Everything that happens like that in the kingdom is always recorded. They write it down. Because they only have written history. They don't have TV or video playbacks or YouTube. Let's watch that, Mordecai, the assassination plot. They don't have that. So the king reads the whole story of the assassination plot again, and he realizes, good God, Mordecai saved my life. Now, when a person saves the life of a king, he is honored greatly. The king reads through the journals. We didn't honor this guy. We forgot to have a party for him. So, it's morning. The gallows are constructed, and the king calls Haman in. Haman's like, "Hey, I've got gallows. I'm having another party. I've already had one. Hey, I am in like Flint with this king." So the following morning, the king asks him a question. He says, "Hey, Haman, what do you think we should do for a guy that really honors the king?" And Haman's like, "It's me. He's going to honor me. He's talking about me." So he's really going to play it up. And he says, "Hey, we should give that guy the king's robe. We should give him a crown, like one of the king's crown. We should get him to sit on the king's horse, and then we're going to parade him through the streets, and we're going to have that someone who the king wants to honor to be, like, treated." The king says, "Fabulous idea, Haman. I love you. You're amazing." He said, "Great, go get Mordecai. He's the one." Can you imagine now? Haman is just wanting to string the gallows up like right this second. He's incensed. He can't believe it. So now it's the night of the second banquet. The king's having a great time, enjoying the feast. And Esther, he says, "Esther, you're killing me here, girlfriend. What do you want? I'm going to give you half the kingdom, I swear. Just tell me what you want." Sometimes us women, we just kind of like take a while to get to the point, don't we? We can circle around. That's what Pastor Scott always says to me. Get to the point! The king says, "Get to the point." Well, with wisdom and great boldness, she throws down her card of one, and she says this without any hesitation. She informs the king that there is a plot to destroy her and her people. He's like, what? You and your people? Well, who is this evil person that has plotted to kill my queen and her people? He has no idea who she's talking about. He doesn't know she's a Jew. And she says, it's the evil, wicked one right there, Haman. The king goes into a rage. This is his number two guy. He's incensed. He goes crazy. He says, I got to have a time out. And he takes a walk. Well, Haman knows the jig's up. He's been found out. So what's Haman doing? He's throwing himself at the queen. She's on the couch. He's throwing himself at her, begging, please, oh my gosh, he's going to destroy me. He's going to, you know, he's freaking out. So the king comes back in. Why is that guy on the couch with my queen? Oh, he flips out. He thinks he's assaulting her. So right at that very moment, he said, I've had enough. And he commands them to come and drag Haman out. And he said, hey, do we have anywhere we can hang this guy? And they said, hey, yeah, there's a new gallows that was just built. It's right by his house. And they hang him. All right, let's wrap up the story. Haman's estate is given to Mordecai. Mordecai takes Haman's place. Actually, if you keep reading in the Bible, there's a lot of stuff, more stuff that happens. That's what I want you to read in Esther. They actually kill 10 of Haman's sons. I mean, when you cross the line, you cross the line with the king. But we have a problem. The problem is the king can't rescind an order that he makes. He can't go back on his word. So the word is still out there that the Jews are going to be killed. So Esther is like, what are we going to do? He said, I'm going to make another order. What do you think we should do? She has the ear of the king. She has the power of one. The king gives another command, and she says this, let the Jews defend themselves. Let them fight back. And he says, okay, we'll do it. So he puts out another new order, a new proclamation, and he says, Jews, you can arm yourself, you can defend yourself. And a battle rages because everybody's going after the Jews, and not one Jew was even hurt. Not one Jew was even slaughtered. In this story of Esther, we see the power of one. We see the power of Queen Vashti. We see the power of one of Mordecai, her cousin. We see the power of one in Queen Esther. We see how God uses one woman for such a time as this, who was willing to make a stand, risk her life, and save herself and all of her people, the Jewish nation, from genocide. How God used Mordecai, a single guy, a cousin, to adopt an orphan, to raise her to fear God, continue to speak faith into her life all the way along, and propel her to save his people for such a time as this. We see how God used Queen Vashti's no to open up that position for Esther to become the voice of God to the king. You know, I'm not saying that you're going to be in front of the king and things like this are going to happen, because it's a whole different time. But I'm saying to you is that you were born and placed on the earth for a plan and a purpose. And there are some times when your life intersects and you're going to have opportunities to be the one. Now, to be the one might not be like as grand as Esther, but to be the one could be this. Somebody who doesn't know Jesus Christ as their Lord and Savior, and you work with them every single day. And they're going to die and go to hell, and they stood next to you on the factory line. You can be the one voice, to present or sow seed into their lives about Jesus Christ. You could be the one to stand up and say, hey, you know what? I want to make a difference. I had a friend, and she became the one, and she made a difference, and she started the very first pregnancy center here in Sterling. And they became all over the United States. But she was one person, and she had a burden to see unborn children saved, to intervene with girls that were in crisis pregnancies. And she stood up and saved hundreds and thousands of babies because of her one voice. You can be the power of one to give somebody that hug that is down and depressed, and you know it and you saw it. You can be that power of one to just wrap your arms around him and tell him, God has you. You're not alone. you're going to be okay. You can be that power of one person on their knees every day praying for our nation, praying for our president, praying for our officials. So the power of one, you are going to be faced with opportunity, and whether they're large or small, I want you to ask yourself this question. When you're presented with that opportunity, is it me? Am I the one? Have I been put in a position for such a time as this to make a difference? Do not refuse to do the something that only you can do. Remember Queen Esther? He said, hey, if you refuse it, God will pick somebody else. But you and your family might not be here. Don't refuse that opportunity. What would happen if all of us committed to take advantage of a situation and be the power of one? In small ways, in big ways. Well, for this woman, the power of one orphan saved an entire generation from genocide. The power of one woman willing to say, I'll do it. I'll risk it. Let's bow our head and close our eyes.